Well, I appreciate your time. I'm a big baseball fan. This is not my this is not my full-time job. I work for an insurance company, but I've been helping out Saber with a few of the player biographies, and the idea that Saber has is that every single Major League Baseball player who has ever appeared will have a biography on its website. Now, in addition to that, there's also going to be some books and some initiatives that are focused on specific subsets. So, for example, recently I did a few for Venezuelan players, and I've been working on one on the greatest comeback games and also on the 1995 Atlanta Braves. And specifically, I was assigned yours because there's a project on a handful of players whose major league career had one hit.
And
you're part of that select group, although I think that your career is fascinating and I have tons of questions, not just on that particular instance.
Right.
So, first question that I have for you, tell me about yourself growing up. Was baseball your favorite sport? Who were your favorite players?
That's all I ever did.
Okay.
That's all I ever did. Back when I played, that's when they had war uniforms.
Wow.
You know, and wooden bats.
Yep.
And I started playing at 6 years old, and I just fell in love with it and just never lost the passion. I still have the passion, you know.
Did you play pretty much every single position, or did you specialize yourself
pretty early? I came up as a shortstop, and I pitched.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played high school. I got drafted like 3 times as a shortstop.
Yeah.
And then I ended up signing with the Red Sox as a shortstop. And I don't know if you remember a guy named Ray Quinones.
Yep. From Puerto Rico. Yep.
So I had no chance. Yeah. Ray was a good dude.
Yep.
And what they did, Boston, I went to instructional link. They tried to get me to play second base,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't do it. So then I went to spring training and playing second base. And the last day of spring training, they said, "Dan, we're going to move you to left field." And I played, and I ended up leading the league in hitting that year. Made
yep.
8 errors, but then little by little the errors went down. So I never played the outfield, but it was easier to me because then you have to concentrate on all kinds of other stuff. So it made my hitting better.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I could relax a little bit more.
Which is really interesting. Hindsight, of course, being 2020, but Ray, good fielder, Spike Owen, later on, good fielder, Meredith
yeah.
Barrett,
yeah.
All right, players. But the Boston outfield was completely just loaded in the 80s. So,
yeah, that's when we had Jim Wright, we yeah. had Dwight Evans, we had Nick Asaski.
Yeah.
Danny Heap, you know, it was a good team, and you know, I had no chance. But see, they were on their way out then,
because
mm-hmm. that's when Ellis Burks broke in.
Yep.
You know, and then Brady Anderson, they all jumped over me,
yep.
and I had way better numbers than they did, and they just didn't. They didn't have a place for me. They didn't expect me to do what I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I.
Because you know how the game is. They choose players. They choose who they want there. You
mm-hmm.
know. No matter what they do, they're going to put them there, especially if they're a high draft pick.
Yep.
I mean, it's the politics of it, you know.
And it is interesting because you were Anderson and Burks and even Greenwell. You were teammates with these guys, so it was a direct
yeah.
comparison, not comparing,
yeah.
say, single A to double A or double A to triple A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played with them all. You know, and coming up through the minor leagues, like Brady, he was behind me. He
mm-hmm.
ended up passing. And that's after I hit 300 5 times for them.
Yeah.
You know, not just 300, but, you know, 384, 360. I mean, I hit. And they just kept passing them up. And then sooner or later I got the call. And they kept telling me I didn't hit enough home runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was like, because they made up an excuse every time. I'm like, why? You know, because every time someone wanted me, they put me on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then no one could touch me. So I knew someone wanted me. You know, and I asked for a trade. Well, we can't trade away a 300 hitter.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, well, you didn't hit enough home runs. So 1 year I hit 10 home runs in AAA,
yep.
but I only hit 253, and I didn't like that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like that. So I just did what I did, and I finally got out of there. So that was a good thing. And see, I went up and I did well. Like I got through with runner out, I had an assist, and I had a hit. You know, So it wasn't like I was overmatched when I was there. It's just they didn't want me there.
Yeah.
So.
When you were growing up, who were your favorite players?
I didn't have any.
Okay.
I still don't. I just always felt like, I didn't want to be in awe of anyone.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I felt like when I was going through it, I was the best player out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, most of the time I was. You know, but once you get into minor leagues, it's tough because you get guys that are better than you, and then you just have to step up. And I just never wanted to be in awe of anyone.
Yeah. And did your parents love baseball as well? What did they do for a living?
My dad died when I was six.
Mm.
But I would hear stories when we'd be out in the streets with him, he would make a slide. You know, watch my son slide, you know. That was cool. My mom, she loved it. I mean, she loved it. And she was kind of on the verge of being obnoxious. She had this cowbell. So she did that when I was in the minor leagues, too.
Well, you got drafted a couple times, so she must have done something right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, my parents, she remarried, and my dad wasn't really a baseball fan, but he turned into one because I had two other brothers who all played baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my older brother played for Eddie Stanky in South Alabama.
Really?
Yeah, because that's where I went to school in Mobile.
Uh-huh, yeah. and in your first draft, you were drafted late, right? It was the 34th round, but in the second one, it was in the first round, and yet you didn't sign.
That was in January. Mm-hmm. Remember back in the day, they had a winter draft.
Ah, the secondary, yes. Draft. Yes, that's right. Okay.
And I got drafted in the first round by Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think the money was right. You know, because the money wasn't there in the winter draft. Mm-hmm. The money was in the June draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up being a free agent. I got $40,000. And back then, that's pretty good.
Absolutely.
Number one picks were getting 80.
Yeah, the delta has certainly increased. That's for sure nowadays.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Now, when I was in the big leagues, it was $56,000 a year. And then I got sent down the next year. It went up to $300,000.
Wow. Now, it was Ed Scott who signed you, right?
Yes.
Familiar with him before he...
Yes, because okay. I'm from Mobile. He's from Mobile, so okay. He scouted me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the guy, there was a guy named Harrison mm-hmm. that played for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he had another, but his dad was a scout too, and he scouted me. And he told me he didn't think I had enough pop in my bat.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he didn't sign me. But Ed did, and, you know, we went back one year. Mobile would have all their alumni would come, Luis Gonzalez, who was the outfielder for the Marlins that was a good center fielder? All these guys went to South Alabama.
Preston Wilson?
And so I was, no. What is his name? And Eric Yielding, remember Eric Yielding?
Oh, yeah. Astros and
Fairhope. Yeah, he's from Fairhope, which is right outside, basically Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
But Ed, we all went to play South Alabama and I was so proud that Ed Scott came, and it made me feel good because I'm not sure if he ever signed anyone that went to the big leagues.
Wow. Yeah, except a big one, huh?
Yeah.
Big famous one.
Cool.
Hank Aaron.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. And Tommy Agee's from Mobile, too.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of good players that come out of Mobile.
Did he sign Hank's brother as well?
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know.
I'll have to look into that.
I don't know.
Now, you mentioned you grew up in Mobile, but you were born in West Virginia, right?
Yes, correct. We're...
So when did the family move to Alabama?
What happened was after my dad died, my mom was married, and then we moved to Penn Hills,
mm-hmm.
and which is near where I live now. And then we moved to a place called Monroeville.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when, from Monroeville, my freshman year, we moved to Alabama. So I was there freshman year.
I see. Okay. And... when you look back at the minor leagues, and obviously there was frustration not getting the call up, you were there 83, 84, 85, 86, 87,
Jeez,
88. What kept you going? Were there specific managers or specific teammates who kept you going? Because a lot of people would have said, hey, this is not worth it.
Yeah, well, the only reason why is because I did good. Mm-hmm. I put up numbers. Why would I quit? The only time I really wanted to quit was when I hit 315 in Double A. I went to Triple A, and I had to play behind Mike Greenwell.
Mm-hmm.
And we had six outfielders that year because mm-hmm. I deserved to go to Triple A because I didn't play, but I deserved to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Triple A. I hit like 270, I think,
mm-hmm.
and then. Mike Greenwell went to the big leagues the following year, so I said, okay, this is my turn. This will be my time to go. And the next year I didn't, you know, to get the Triple A job, you know, to be the one to play left field. And I didn't. I got pissed. So they sent me back to Double A. And then that's the only time that I really felt like quitting then. And then I ended up doing better. I mean, I'm probably the only guy that made two Double A All-Star teams.
Yeah.
You know, in a three-year period, you know.
And then finally you get the call up. It's 1989. You get into your first game. They put you into this defensive substitution, and you get your first at bat. Everything that every kid has ever dreamed of, and you get drilled with the first pitch.
Yes, you know, it was funny. We're walking. The thing is, I had just flew in that night too, from Winston-Salem. Cause I was in Winston-Salem. Oh no, I just flew in. I'm thinking a whole other thing. But we're walking back out of the clubhouse with Bob Stanley. Remember Bob Stanley?
Yeah. Steamer, yeah.
Okay, he told me that sometimes pitchers will hit you because they don't want you to get their first hit off you. So I don't know if that was the case or not.
Is that so? Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah.
Granted,
that
it wasn't.
Goes on my card, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Got his first hit off of XYZ.
Yeah.
And they don't want that. So I thought that was it.
Yeah, especially considering it wasn't a close game. I mean, it was the top of the ninth, but the Red Sox, that is, they were down to like 6 runs. It wasn't like you yourself could hit a 7-run home run. But
exactly.
So once you got there, was there ever a thought in your mind of like, okay, I'm going to try to steal or something along those lines? Or at that point where you're
no,
just
I played
for
the
signs?
Game like it should have been played. You know, mm-hmm. I got on the base and there was a little pop fly to Yvonne Calderon
mm-hmm.
in right field. So I kind of went halfway, you know, because I didn't know he was going to catch it. So he caught it, so I started going back to first base, and then he dropped it.
Mm.
He threw me out a second, you know. So that kind of got me a little bit. But, I mean, there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah.
But that was a good base run. It wasn't like I did anything wrong. It just happened that way.
Yeah, and Ed Romero was the one who had the pop-up, obviously not somebody who's known for power there. So you were being cautious, rightfully so.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So then a few games later, you finally get your first opportunity. You get the opportunity to – well, actually, first, on June 25th, you got to play an entire game. That was the game.
Yes, that was the game I had my hit.
But
against the Twins.
But you had gone into a few others where you'd been in for an inning or so on. So tell me, when did you hear, was it that same day that the skipper told you, hey, you're starting, or was this something that
no,
you knew before?
It was the morning of the game.
Okay.
You go in and you go in the locker room and they post the lineup up on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember Rich Cerrone, he saw me there, he goes, oh, you can go take a shit now.
Yeah.
I saw my name. I was hitting 98.
And
that was cool because I had a pinch. I struck out against the Twins my first at bat. That was the game that I threw Gino Petrelli out.
Yep.
And I wasn't a pinch hitter. I'm an everyday guy. You know.
Yep.
I told Joe Morgan, was our manager. I said, you know, I'm good. I said, but I just want to start.
Yeah.
You know, give me three at bats. I know I'm going to get a hit if you give me three or four at bats, and I did.
Yeah. And some of your former teammates were playing that game, as you mentioned, Greenwell, as well as Asaski and so on.
Yep. And it was funny. I was going to have one last at bat, and I was going to be able to face Reardon. And Deadman gets a single, and he tries to stretch into a double, and he throws him out the game. Because I was up after Deadman.
Well, and he's such a speedy guy, right?
Yeah, I know. We're two outs. I'm going, what do you think, dude? You know?
So, what do you remember about that at bat? What do you remember about the pitcher?
About the hit?
And even before the hit, like knowing, oh, okay, Alan Anderson's pitching, asking the players, what do I know about this guy?
My first at bat, Richie Hebner was our hitting guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes, he's leading a lot of guys off with fastballs. Go up and take a hack. So my first at bat, he throws me a chest-high fastball, and I fouled it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up getting me, I ended up flying to left. So then the next at bat, you know, and I was a dead red hitter. I'm like, I'm looking fastball all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did, he threw me a changeup. And I stayed back just enough, and I swear to God, I missed a home run maybe by 2 inches.
And that was your second or third at bat of the day? I think it was your third, right?
That was the second. That was my second.
Okay. What do you remember about the first at bat? Were you looking for a specific pitch?
No, just fastball.
Mm.
Fastball. Oh. Actually, with my first at bat, I fly out. Yeah, my second at bat, I doubled. And the third at bat, I ground out the gag.
I see.
On a slow roll up.
So the season's over. You've had a handful of at bats and a handful of games, of course, and you kind of go back to the minors. You went to Charlotte in Vancouver in 1990. What?
They traded me. I was a player to be named later.
Uh huh.
So when I got sent down back to Pawtucket, the last week of the season, Vancouver was in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they traded me to the White. Because remember Walt Reniac,
mm-hmm.
he went to the White Sox, and so he recommended them sign me. So I go there, which was cool because we ended up playing in the championship. We won the PCL that year for a week's worth of work. And I only played a week, their last week of games, and then we went into the playoffs.
Not bad.
Yeah. So that turned out okay.
Yeah, and I'm in Sacramento. That Vancouver franchise is the one that became the Riverkens. So.
Yeah.
All right. So then you have a couple years off before going back to the Independent League. Tell me about that. Was it a conscious decision? Were you thinking about playing perhaps in the foreign leagues?
Well, I signed 1 year. I played when they had the replacement team, Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
I played for them. I played for them and did well, made the club. And we were just sitting around waiting to come to Pittsburgh, which never happened.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then when I was out, totally out of the game, I still played in the league here, and it was a college league, and I used my wood, but I could still play, and I wanted to play, and I felt like I wanted to play until my body said I couldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
And then I signed with Duluth. I was the first player to be signed in the Northern League.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Duluth and ended up hitting 290 there, and they wanted to re-sign me, and my wife was pregnant, so I didn't go back. So I took maybe 2 years off, and then I had a coach that I had in the minor league. His name was Ed Noddle, and he went to Sioux City, and so he signed me and went to Sioux City, and then I had back issues, and that's when I was done. That was it.
Were those back issues you'd had before, or just something like?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I have throughout the minor, all my whole career.
Yeah.
So then my leg went numb.
Yeah.
You know, so they shot the bulging disc, and that was it.
And then you immediately made a pretty fast pivot to being an instructor, hitting coach, assistant coach, down the line manager. So how did you latch on with the Seattle organization? Because that wasn't one that you had played with.
I had a friend in Mobile, and he was my second baseman on my high school team.
I see.
And he was a field coordinator, so that's how I got the job.
He
called me and said, hey, you want a job? I said, yeah.
And you started as hitting coach and then shifted, they moved you up a level, right, California to Arizona and to assistant coach. How different was it to be an assistant coach versus a hitting coach in 98?
Well, there really is no difference. You know, I mean you're pretty much the manager of a minor league club. He runs the show.
Mm-hmm.
He runs the show. I didn't mind being the hitting guy. I like being the hitting guy because I had Adam Jones. I had Luis Valbuena. Mm-hmm. I had Chin Soo Chu.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like I was a part of their development. So that made me feel good. That made me feel real good. Because I was a part of their development.
Absolutely. Well,
I had Rafael. I'm the one that told him to put Rafael Soriano on the mound.
Yeah.
he had a hose from right field. And he couldn't hit a lick. I said, put him on the mound. And the rest is history.
You should be getting dividends for that one. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. I know. Shouldn't I?
And you briefly went to the Anaheim organization in 2001 with the Quakes. What was the reason why? Because then you went back to Seattle.
No, I wasn't. I don't know where you got that from. I was
Huh.
with Seattle the whole time.
Oh, wait. Okay, so I see a typo here. Were you with the Rancho Cucamonga in 2001?
No, I was with San Bernardino, but that was
Okay.
still Seattle. It
Oh,
was
wait a
still
sec.
Seattle.
Okay, interesting.
Rancho Cucamonga was the San Diego Padres
Interesting.
when
Okay,
I was there.
I'm looking at the baseball cube and it does I see a split entry. I see 2001 San Bernardino Stampede and well that, yeah, that's definitely a mistake because they have you for both the same year. So, okay, sorry about
Oh, sorry.
that. Now, you mentioned some of the players that you mentored as you were their hitting coach. When you look back at what they were doing at that age, and some of them might have been in the minors for a while, what would you say besides just, hey, hold your hands this way or look for that pitch? Did you give them any wisdom or any advice on how to handle the
Well,
minors and how to handle the frustration?
one specifically, sometimes my feeling on hitting is that either you can hit or you can't. You know, you're never going to make a 250 hitter into a 330 hitter. That's not going to happen. If you're a 250 hitter, I can maybe get you to a 255, maybe 260, but you're never going to get a 250 hitter be a 300 hitter. So Adam Jones could hit. So a lot of guys, you just leave alone. You know what I mean? You get him to look fastball and adjust the curve. But Shin Tzu Chu was the main one because he was left-handed, and Shin Tzu Chu, he was a left center gap. He would kill it all the time. So they kept telling him to pull the ball. They wanted him to hit for more power. And he just kept rolling over, rolling over. So I called him, like, look, man, just let him hit. Because he's not doing anything right now. And so we got him back to just staying inside the ball and keeping the ball between the lines. And like I said, the rest is history. Then the power will come. He'll figure
Yeah.
that out, which he did.
Which is true. A lot of players. I was actually just watching the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and Jay Buhner was talking about Edgar and how Edgar was mostly hitting a good average batter, not a home runs, and the power would come as they matured and kind of saw a little bit more. So, excellent.
See, a lot of guys too, if you think about it, if you can hit in the minor leagues, you'll hit in the big leagues because the pitchers are around the plate. So a lot of guys become Alex Burks never hit over, I don't think he ever hit over 270 in the minor leagues. If he goes to big league, he has 300 with 20 home runs.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
he never did that in the minor leagues.
Yeah. So your last coaching job was in 2010, is that correct? Tell me about what you've been doing since then.
I've been coaching. I coached high school baseball, one in my community, and it was not very good. It's like they have levels of ball. You have 6A, 5A, 4A, 3A, 2A, 1A. And the school I was coaching at is 2A. So it was just, and it took me 4 years for them to hire me. I'm like, dude, you know, and my kids all graduated from the school. So we got in the playoffs 1 year. I only did it 2 years because the kids were like, oh, I got to work today, just stuff like that. So this past year, I went to a place called Kent Trafford, and it's 6A. And he needed a base running guy, and he's like, dude, I need you. You know, so I went out, and we ended up being ranked number one in Pennsylvania the whole year. Yeah, it was awesome. 250th in the nation.
Yeah, that's how I got a hold of
So
you.
that's it.
I did a search
Yeah,
and I found the
exactly. With
website. So,
Dan.
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dana. I really appreciate it. What I'll do is over the next couple of weeks, I'll probably start putting my notes together and kind of write it. Right now, I've got one more that I'm putting the finishing touches, but I'll send it to you so you can take a look
Okay.
and make sure that I didn't capture anything incorrectly.
Okay. No, I would love a copy of it anyway.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate it and
Okay.
have a wonderful
All right,
day.
buddy. If you need anything else, let me know.
Will do. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.